नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3, Chapter 22. Chapter 22 is entitled The Marriage of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. And today we are on verse 20. Verse 20. Yato bhavad vishvamidam vichitram. Yato bhavad vishvamidam vichitram. संस्थास्यते यत्र च वाविष्ठस्ते संस्थास्यते यत्र च वावितिष्ठते प्रजापतीनां पतिरेष मह्यम् प्रजापतीनां पतिरेष मह्यम् परं प्रमाणं भगवान् अनन्तः परं प्रमाणं भगवान् अनन्तः यतो भवद्विश्वमिदं विचित्रम् संस्थाष्यते यत्र च वा वितिष्ठते प्रजापतीनां पतिरेष मह्यम् परं प्रमाणं भगवान् अनन्तः यतो भवद्विश्वमिदं विचित्रम् संस्थाष्यते यत्र च वा वतिष्ठते प्रजापतीनां पतिरेष मह्यम् परं प्रमाणं भगवान् अनन्तः यतः फ्रॉम हूम अभवत् इमनेटेड विश्वम् क्रिएशन इदम् This, vichitram, wonderful, samsthasyate, will dissolve, yatra, in whom, cha, and, va, or, avatishthate, presently exists, prajapatinam, of the prajapatis, pati, the lord, esha, This, mahiyam, to me, param, highest, pramanam, authority, Bhagwan, supreme lord, anantaha, unlimited. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation, the highest authority for me is the unlimited supreme personality of Godhead, from whom this wonderful creation emanates and whom its sustenance and dissolution rest. He is the origin of all prajapatis, the personalities meant to produce living entities in this world. Purport. Kardama Muni was ordered by his father, Prajapati, to produce children. In the beginning of creation, the prajapatis were meant to produce the large population which was to reside in the planets of the gigantic universe. But Kardama Muni said that although his father was Prajapati, who desired him to produce children, actually his origin was the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. Because Vishnu is the origin of everything. He is the actual creator of this universe. He is the actual maintainer. And when everything is annihilated, it rests in him only. That is the conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam. For creation, maintenance and annihilation, there are three deities, Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwara. But Brahma and Maheshwara are qualitative expansions of Vishnu. Vishnu is the central figure. Vishnu therefore takes charge of maintenance. No one can maintain the whole creation but he. There are innumerable entities and they have innumerable demands. No one but Vishnu can fulfill the innumerable demands of all the innumerable living entities. Brahma is ordered to create and Shiva is ordered to annihilate. The middle function, maintenance, is taken charge of by Vishnu. Kardama Muni knew very well, by his power and progressive spiritual life, that Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, was his worshipable deity. Whatever Vishnu desired was his duty and nothing else. He was not prepared to beget a number of children. He would beget only one child who would help the mission of Vishnu. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, whenever there is a discrepancy in the discharge of religious principles, the Lord descends on the surface of the earth to protect religious principles and to annihilate the miscreants. Marrying and begetting a child is considered to liquidate one's debts to the family in which one is born. There are many debts which are imposed upon a child just after his birth. There are debts to the family in which one is born, debts to the demigods, debts to the pitas, debts to the rishis, etc. But if someone engages only in the service of the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, who is actually worshipable, then even without trying to liquidate other debts, one becomes free from all obligations. Kardama Muni preferred to devote his life as a servant of the Lord in Paramahamsa knowledge and to beget a child only for that purpose, not to beget numberless children to fill up the vacancies in the universe. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So just to set a little bit of context, today's chapter is entitled The Marriage of Devahuti, Kardama Muni and Devahuti. The previous chapter was actually two conversations taking place. The first conversation was between Lord and Kardama Muni, and the second conversation was between Kardama Muni and Swayambhuva Manu. So Kardama Muni had done penances and austerities and the Lord had personally come to give him darshan. And then the Lord is speaking to Kardama Muni and the Lord is asking him about his desires and explaining to him how the Lord is having plans to fulfill his desires. And then the next conversation happens between Kardama Muni and Manu. Manu, as per the desire of the Lord, actually has come to meet Kardama Muni. And in the previous chapter, Kardama Muni is actually glorifying the exalted position of Swayambhuva Manu. Swayambhuva Manu is the emperor of the entire universe. He is a righteous king. So Kardama Muni is actually glorifying his exalted position. And in this chapter, Manu then starts speaking in response to Kardama Muni's glorification. Now Manu was conversing in the beginning of the chapter. He submits his plea to Kardama Muni in this chapter. And what was the plea of Swayambhuva Manu? He actually requests Kardama Muni to accept his daughter Devahuti in Devahuti's hand in marriage. So it is noteworthy here to see that even though Swayambhuva Manu was the emperor of the entire universe, now you know if there is a person who is the king even of one country, you can imagine how much wealth, how wealthy that king is. But here Swayambhuva Manu is the emperor of the entire universe. So we can imagine his exalted position in terms of opulence. How rich he must have been, how much opulence, how much wealth, how much comforts must have been at his disposal. And the same things must have been at the disposal of his daughter as well. But despite having such so much wealth and such an exalted position, Swayambhava Manu has come personally to meet a sage. Now, where do sages reside? Kardama Muni was residing actually on the banks of a river in a hermitage. What does a hermitage mean? A hermitage means it will be like a small hut in natural settings. So if you see wealth-wise, there was absolutely no match between Swayambhuva Manu and Manu's position and Kardama Muni's position. But yet this particular chapter and this section of the Bhagavatam is portraying Vedic culture. So in Vedic culture, even exalted kings, they were not giving importance to matching wealth. So nowadays if we see, like, you know, first of all, parents are not given a choice only. Most of the time the girls and boys select their partners themselves. But even if there's a choice given, the parents usually look for a match, that if we are rich, oh, we have to get our son or daughter married in an equally rich or aristocratic family. So that is usually the criteria. Money becomes the criteria for matchmaking in Kali Yuga. However, in the previous ages, that was not the case. So Swayambhuva Manu, ignoring the wealth part, he was looking at the qualities of Kardama Muni. He knew Kardama Muni is a self-realized sage. He is actually a devotee of the Lord. And Swayambhuva Manu knew that he will not find a better match for his daughter in terms of his qualities to marry. So Swayambhuva Manu has submitted his plea to Devahuti. Now, not only Swayambhuva Manu is exalted in his thinking that he has come to actually ask Kardama Muni, who is no match about his to his wealth, for his hand. But it is also noteworthy to see Devahuti's qualities. So it is mentioned that Devahuti, when she heard from Narad Muni, we know he is a traveling preacher, so he would travel all around the world and he would sing the glories of people, great devotees or great personalities whom he had met, and he would that way spread glories of such people. So Devahuti, during one of the travels of Narad Muni, had heard about the glories of Kardama Muni. And when she heard the glories of Kardama Muni, she sets her heart on him. She decides, just as we know how Rukmini had heard the glories of Krishna and she had set her heart on him. So in the same way, Devahuti had heard the glories of Kardama Muni and she had also set her heart on him to marry. So again we see here how these princesses were also trained in Vedic culture. She is also coming from a rich aristocratic family. She is the daughter of the emperor of the universe. How comfortably her upbringing must have been, her childhood. She must have been brought up in palace in all the comforts that an emperor can give to her his daughter. But yet Devahuti is still wanting to marry Kardama Muni, fully well knowing that he is a sage. And if she marries him, she will have to go and live in a forest with him, in a hermitage. And she will have to do the same austerities which he is doing. So despite knowing all these things, Devahuti still wanted to marry Kardama Muni just because of the qualities of Kardama Muni. So this again shows how Vedic culture was, in Vedic culture, even the daughters were trained to think like that. So it's not that the father is looking for this match and he feels it's good, but Devahuti is revolting. No, I will marry only a prince. How can I go and live in the forest and do these austerities? No, even Devahuti has set her heart. She does not care about the austerities, but she is ready to marry Kardama Muni because of the qualities and because of the devotion of Kardama Muni. So now Kardama Muni responds to Manu's plea. When Manu submits his plea that, can you accept my daughter in marriage and can you please marry her and accept her as your wife? So now in the previous verses, few verses, Kardama Muni has started responding to Manu's plea. And he is assuring the king that he is very happy to accept such a qualified girl as Devahuti. And he actually glorifies Devahuti's qualities, her beauty. And he says that, I know that there was one Gandharva who actually fell off his airplane when he saw the beauty of Devahuti. And she has lots of good qualities. So which person who is of marriageable age will not accept such a nice daughter as yours in marriage? So Kardama Muni glorifies Devahuti and assures the king that, I will accept her hand. However, he also lays a condition. And that condition we read in yesterday's verse, in the previous verse. He says that he will leave home as soon as Devahuti has some children. And he will take sannyas. So we see again how Kardama Muni is a sage who's getting ready to marry, but he is not forgetting the goal of life. So he's telling the king that, I will marry your daughter, but after that, once I give her children, suitable children, who will help preach the mission of Vishnu, I will actually leave home and take sannyas. And as you know, once he says this, he becomes silent. So still Manu is not rejecting. Manu is not saying, oh my God, my daughter will be alone. How can I get my daughter married to a person who is going to take sannyas so soon? No, still Manu is happy because he knows he's a sage whom he is giving his daughter to. So obviously this is going to be the natural conclusion for a self-realized sage. So Manu then gives the plea, Kardama Muni accepts and Manu leaves. And in today's verse, Kardama Muni is glorifying the position of Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is saying that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is ultimately the source of all Prajapatis. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport. Prabhupada says that Kardama Muni was ordered by Lord Brahma, his father, who was also a Prajapati, to actually populate the universe. Because from Lord Brahma, these rishis were born, and Lord Brahma had given them the duty to populate all the planets. Prabhupada says there were gigantic planets in this gigantic universe. So imagine the type of population that would be needed to actually fill up the universe. So Brahma had given this charge to all his sons. And Kardama Muni was one of the sons whom Brahma had given this order. So on receiving the order from Kardama Muni, it is not that Kardama Muni set out looking for a nice girl. That okay, I've received this order from my father, I have to help him populate the universe. Let me go and look out for a nice girl, marry her and produce numberless children. No, we see what Kardama Muni does. Kardama Muni actually goes and performs austerities for 10,000 years, it is explained. And all this is happening in Satya Yuga. So obviously the lifespans were very, very long. And people could perform austerities and penances and meditation for 10,000 years. So Kardama Muni does that. He goes on the banks of Saraswati and he performs austerities for 10,000 years. What was the purpose of his austerities? The purpose of his austerities was to purify his consciousness. To prepare his consciousness so that once his consciousness is purified, a very good girl would be attracted to him. And then very good children would be attracted to the womb of that particular wife. So with that purpose, Kardama Muni performs austerities for 10,000 years. In fact, we see the verse which is mentioned earlier in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Akama Sarva Kamova Moksha Kama Udaradi. So there it is mentioned that whether you have no desires, akama means no desires, or whether you are full of desires, sakama, or moksha kama, whether you are desiring liberation, in whichever situation you are, please worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see Kardama Muni doing that. He actually wants to marry. Now, you know, in Kali Yuga, if we think about it, marriage is such a simple thing. If you want to marry, you wouldn't perform austerities for 10,000 years just to perform an act of marriage. But Kardama Muni did that. And he knew that whatever desire he had, even though marriage is so-called material desire, he still wanted to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, invoke his mercy, and then only marry according to the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So desire for marriage is also fulfilled through the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see that Kardama Muni is thus a perfect yogi. And why is he a perfect yogi? Because Prabhupada mentions throughout Srimad Bhagavatam and even in Bhagavad Gita that the perfection of yoga is when you actually achieve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yoga is not just about doing some meditation or doing some bodily postures and all that, which nowadays it has been reduced to. But yoga means to link with the Supreme Lord. And perfection of yoga is achieved when you have darshan, when you actually see the Supreme Lord face to face. And Kardama Muni achieves that goal. He actually achieves the perfection of yoga. Because the Supreme Lord becomes pleased with his austerities and he personally comes down on Garuda to give him darshan and to bless him and to fulfill whatever desires Kardama Muni had in his heart. So we will see that Kardama Muni then submits his plea to the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he has darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he tells Lord Vishnu that I am actually desiring to marry, and that was the purpose of my performing these austerities for 10,000 years. So you please guide me to a suitable girl whom I can marry and then from whom I can produce children. Now it might be startling to see that a yogi, we are saying he achieved perfection of yoga, he had darshan of the Lord. But ultimately when he had darshan of the Lord, instead of asking for pure devotional service or some such devotional desire, he is actually asking for a girl in marriage. So we might externally feel that Kardama Muni has lusty desires in his heart. How is it that he is asking for a girl in marriage when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in front of you, and that too after doing austerities for thousands of years? However, but before we conclude about Kardama Muni being a lustful person, or externally it may appear like that, explanation is given by Srila Prabhupada, which helps us to decipher that actually Kardama Muni was completely working according to the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is more exalted than he appears. He attained real oneness with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is not the oneness which we talk about, which Mayavadis want to achieve. This oneness which Prabhupada explains is oneness with the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it was actually the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that Kardama Muni marries a suitable girl, which would be Devahuti. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead wanted to appear through that union and then come and preach about devotional service. So the Lord actually assures him. The Lord tells him that whatever you have desired, this marriage was actually my desire as well. Because I am going to appear soon through your union, through the womb of Devahuti, as Lord Kapila Dev, and I'm going to come and preach the Sankhya philosophy. So like Anirudh Prabhu was also mentioning a few verses ago in the class, that the whole pastime of Kardama Muni and Devahuti is leading to the appearance of Lord Kapila Dev and to the entire Sankhya philosophy being propagated by Kapila Dev. So we see that Kardama Muni was not a lusty yogi who meditated for 1,000 years and ultimately was trying to fulfill his lustful desire. His desire was completely in line with the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in the former ages, in Satya Yuga and all these ages, great sages would actually do this. They would get married by the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then they would produce children. And because they have done this tapasya for thousands and thousands of years, the children, the progeny that they would produce would be exceptional progeny. This progeny would be like in the previous years, Prabhupada says, it would be like a ray of Vishnu, which would then help preach Krishna consciousness or preach the message of Vishnu throughout the world. And then these sages would retire. They would just give up. They would become detached from their grihastha ashram, and they would retire and go to the forest, accepting the order of sannyas. So this was many sages actually used to do that. Do tapasya, produce children through a very good wife, through a suitable wife, and then leave the world. Leave the grihastha ashram and go back to the forest and again go back to celibacy, which they had practiced for so many years before they got married. So in today's purport, now if we read Srila Prabhupada's purport, there are actually two prominent themes which Srila Prabhupada is talking about. The first theme which Prabhupada was talking about, it is showing how Kardama Muni was very clear about attaining his goal, which is Lord Vishnu, how he had oneness of desire with the Lord. So we see that Kardama Muni had been ordered by Brahma to produce many children. But Kardama Muni ultimately knew that his goal is to satisfy the origin of Brahma. The origin of Brahma is Lord Vishnu, and he is the origin of all Prajapatis. So Kardama Muni wanted, he did not want to deviate from his goal of satisfying Lord Vishnu. And therefore, even though he was ordered by Brahma to produce numberless children, he actually restricted himself and he just had one suitable son. He had 9 daughters before that, who actually then married great sages and helped in propagating or in populating the universe with good progeny. But ultimately he had only one son, and that son was Kapila Dev. So Kardama Muni, we see that although it appears that he did not fulfill Lord Brahma's desire, but he was actually fulfilling Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu's desire. That he knew that the goal is to attain Lord Vishnu, and he did not want to deviate from the goal. Because we know how grihastha ashram is. Grihastha ashram can become very entangling. In this material world, you know, people who are able to actually stick to brahmacharya, it's really glorious. But otherwise, people who get married, most of the population, most of the devotee congregation, actually takes to married life. So we see, but grihastha ashram becomes very complicated, especially in Kali Yuga. You get married, you have to have a house, you have to have a car, find a job to sustain your grihastha ashram. Then you will get children, their education, look after their marriage, they have to settle down. So it's like a vicious cycle. You're just caught in it, and it's very hard to come out. And Kardama Muni knew this. He knew that if he gets entangled producing, you know, the type of population which Brahma wants him to produce, he is never going to be able to come out and attain the goal of attaining Vishnu. So he just has one child, which was Kapila Dev, and then he actually leaves. He takes sannyas and he leaves Devahuti and goes away, placing Devahuti under the care of Kapila Dev. And then it also shows that he states this condition to Lord Vishnu, and in the next verse, the verse after this, which is verse 21, he becomes silent. He states his condition to Lord Vishnu. He glorifies the Supreme Lord in today's verse, and he states his condition to Swayambhuva Manu, that he's going to leave Devahuti, he's going to leave Grahasthashram after he has one suitable son. And then he becomes silent in the next verse. And as soon as he becomes silent, he again starts meditating and thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, of whose darshan he had just had. And Prabhupada explains, in fact, there is a very nice lecture Prabhupada has given on this section, where Prabhupada mentions that exalted devotees don't even lose one moment without being Krishna conscious. So he was having a conversation with Swayambhuva Manu, but as soon as he became silent, he again started meditating on Lord Vishnu. And Prabhupada explains over there that Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayor. Prabhupada gives the example of Ambarish Maharaj. So Ambarish Maharaj was also a grahastha. He was a king who had so many duties to perform. But Ambarish Maharaj was always fully Krishna conscious. For not even for one moment, Ambarish Maharaj's attention would deviate from Lord Krishna or from thinking about the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So Prabhupada says that working to maintain the family is required in Kali Yuga. First of all, grahasthashram, accepting grahasthashram is the safest way, Prabhupada says in Kali Yuga. Most of the people are going to get married. And then working to maintain your grahasthashram is required. It's a natural thing which people have to do to maintain your family and your children. However, keeping your consciousness absorbed in Krishna, that is the success. So even though we are entangled in our grahasthashram, even though we have to work, even though we have to go out and earn money and come, and which is actually Shudra work, but still Prabhupada says that maintain or keep your consciousness absorbed in Krishna. Like Kardama Muni we see, not even one moment was being wasted. As soon as the conversation is over, again the meditation has gone back to Lord Vishnu. And in this connection, Prabhupada gives the example of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Prabhupada says that Bhakti Vinod Thakur was a great magistrate during the British times. He had so many responsibilities. He had to look after so many cases, handle and resolve so many criminal cases or any cases that were coming to him. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur was an acharya. He was a grahastha acharya who wrote so many books, who preached so much. He was the original preacher of Namahota. He was the original starter, or he was the one who started Bhakti Vruksha programs. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur, despite having a busy schedule, despite having so many children, I believe he had 11 or 12 children. So such a big grahasthashram, such a big responsibility. But Prabhupada says that his consciousness was always absorbed in Krishna. And that is why he was able to achieve, he was able to write so many books, and he was able to preach. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's schedule, if we read, it is actually very inspiring for all grahasthas to follow. The way he used to devote his time for chanting, there was everything which was included in his schedule. Time for chanting, time for writing, time for rest, time for actually going to his magistrate's office and finishing his work and coming, time for meeting and associating with devotees, discussing Krishna Katha. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daily schedule was amazing. And it is an ideal schedule which grahasthas can take inspiration from to follow. So Prabhupada gives that example in connection to the Kardama Muni as well. That Kardama Muni also did not waste a moment. As soon as he was done with Swayambhuva Manu, he starts thinking of Lord Vishnu. And Prabhupada says that this is possible by training and practice. So sometimes we may think as ordinary grahasthas that, you know, this is all possible for exalted personalities like Kardama Muni or Bhakti Vinod Thakur. I am not there. But Prabhupada says that anything is possible by training and by practice. So we as grahasthas also have to train ourselves and have to practice to keep our consciousness absorbed in Krishna, even when we are at work or even when we are at home trying to fulfill other duties of our grahasthashram. And when can that happen? That can happen when we are absorbed in the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, right now we are studying the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in our Bhakti Vedanta course under Keshav Prabhu. And there it is mentioned, Krishna's childhood pastimes are going on. And it is mentioned over there that the solution to all material tribulations, and we know in Kali Yuga the life is full of miseries. There is so much anxiety, there is so much quarrel, there is so much, the mind is always disturbed in Kali Yuga. However, Prabhupada says that the solution to all these material tribulations is absorption in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Hearing and reading about the glorification and the messages of Lord Krishna. And we personally experience that if we keep ourselves absorbed in hearing about Krishna or in reading about Srila Prabhupada and associating with Srila Prabhupada's books, we actually see that the material tribulations don't seem to matter so much. It's not that the miseries will go away from our life once we take shelter of Bhagavatam. They will be there. It's Kali Yuga. We have to go through all the miseries. But when we take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, they don't seem to matter in life. And in this connection, once Jagattarini Mataji had given a very nice example. She had said that when we take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is like taking an elevator. Now we see in big shopping centers or you know some tall buildings, there are glass elevators. And the glass elevator is on the sort of on the exterior of the building. So when you get into that elevator, you can actually see outside. You can see in the street or whatever is outside of that building, you can see that while you're going up in that elevator. So Mataji was explaining that when such an elevator is on the ground, you can see through the glass doors, you can see that there are cars on the street, there are people walking around in the street, and they appear life-size. They appear very big because you're on the ground floor and you're looking at them. But as soon as the elevator starts going up, and let's say it's a very tall building that you're traveling in, so as soon as this elevator starts going up, what happens to the cars and the people down? They start shrinking in size. The more and more the elevator goes up, the smaller and smaller and smaller they will appear to our eyes. And then ultimately when let's say we are on the 40th or 50th floor, they will just appear like dots from that place. So Mataji was explaining that taking shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam is like riding up this elevator. So when we are down and we are dealing with the huge problems of material life on our own and we have not taken shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, these problems will appear life-size, like the cars and people appear life-size. But as soon as we take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, we actually ride up that elevator. So automatically when we go up in that elevator of Srimad Bhagavatam, absorbing our consciousness, the problems of life will shrink. Like the cars, the size of the cars and the people shrink. And the more you elevate your consciousness by taking shelter of the pastimes of Krishna, the smaller and smaller your problems will become and they will then not matter at all. Because our consciousness is completely absorbed in Krishna. So that is one theme which Srila Prabhupada was talking about in his lecture on this section of Srimad Bhagavatam. The second theme which comes out from this verse, and that was in the second paragraph, which we talk about debts. Srila Prabhupada is mentioning about what debts a child has. So Prabhupada says that as soon as a child is born, he becomes indebted. He becomes indebted to his parents because they gave him birth. He becomes indebted to the demigods. He becomes indebted to the forefathers, Pitruloka. He becomes indebted to the rishis. So there are so many debts a child gets into as soon as he is born into this world. In fact, there is a very beautiful verse in the 11th canto, 5th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, verse 41. This is a conversation between Narad Muni and King Vasudev. Narad Muni is giving lots of instructions to King Vasudev. So that verse is, Devarshi Bhutapta Niranam Pritranam Nayam Rini Nakinkaro Rajan Sarvatmanaya Sharanam Sharanyam Gato Mukundam Pariharhirta Kartam. The translation is, O King, and Narad Muni is speaking to Vasudev, one who has given up all material duties in this world and has taken full shelter of Mukunda, who is the giver of liberation. So one who has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, who is giver of liberation, is not indebted anymore to the demigods, to sages, to his relatives, to Pitruloka, and to any other personalities from whom he might be accepting any service. So this is a verse which Srila Prabhupada refers to when he lectures on this section of Srimad Bhagavatam. So as soon as one is born, the first debt which one gets is a debt to the demigods. Now why one becomes indebted to the demigods? And Prabhupada explains there that as soon as a child is born, the first thing he will do is he will start breathing. So what does he need to breathe? He needs air, he needs oxygen. Now, who is supplying this oxygen? Who is supplying this air to the child? It's not the mother or father who have arranged for this oxygen to go into the child's nose. It is actually the demigods. It's Varuna Dev, or whichever demigod is in control of supplying air and, you know, ensuring levels of oxygen are appropriate in this world. That demigod is actually supplying air to the child. So as soon as the child is born, he becomes indebted to that demigod, because he is taking whatever the demigod is giving. He is breathing the air which the demigod is supplying. Then the second demigod he becomes indebted to is sun. Because sunshine is so important for our sustenance, for our life. It is so important to life itself and to live. So as soon as the child is born, he also becomes indebted to the sun god. In fact, Prabhupada again explains that the sun planet is so important in this universe that if the orbit of the sun goes even 1 degree here or there, either the planets of this universe would freeze or the planets of this universe would be on fire. But the sun has been perfectly positioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and its orbit is so perfect that we get the appropriate amount of sunshine on the earth planet, which allows us to live and which allows plants and vegetables to grow, which are again important for our sustenance. The third demigod whom one becomes indebted to as soon as they are born is rain, Lord Indra. Because Lord Indra is sending these clouds, and these clouds are indiscriminately supplying rain to all over, to all the places on the universe. So the clouds do not discriminate when they are supplying rain. They are supplying rain on the hills where there is no rainfall actually required. They supply rain even to the oceans. Now the oceans are, you know, full of water. They are bottomless, so they are full of water. But still the rains, clouds supply rain to the oceans, and the clouds supply rain to the land as well, where it is required for sustenance, for vegetables to grow, so that the child who has been born can then live on this rain and water. So all these demigods the child becomes indebted to. In fact, if you see in terms of water, if we have to just maintain one garden, and if we have to just water one garden, so much efforts are required. So much water we have to get, we have to actually then, you know, put a hose to the tap and then water the garden. But when the clouds are distributing rain, the clouds are distributing rain without any discrimination at all. So just like we have to pay taxes, Prabhupada explains, now at home, you know, especially for grahasthas who maintain their homes, we have to pay taxes, we have to pay water bill. When we get water in our house, we have to pay gas bill for the gas that we get in our house. We have to pay our electricity bills. So we have to pay these taxes or these bills to the department, the various departments. And what happens if we don't pay these bills? You will get one or two reminders, you will get one or two warnings. But still, if you don't pay these bills, the water supply or the electricity supply is going to be cut off. It's not that somebody will keep supplying all these things free of cost to us. But what are we paying to the demigods? Are we paying anything to the demigods for all the water, for all the sunshine, for all the air that we are getting? No, absolutely nothing. So therefore Prabhupada says that it is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is explaining that therefore it is so important to perform yajñas. Because when these yajñas are performed for the different demigods, they get satisfied by the performance of these yajñas. And once they are satisfied, they become very happy with the person who is performing the yajñas. And they supply the necessary sunshine and the required amount of water and air for that person's living. So that is how we actually have to repay our debts to the demigods, by performance of yajñas. If you perform yajñas, you satisfy the demigods. That is actually, we are showing, it's an act of gratitude. We are showing, we are thanking the demigods for supplying all these necessities of life without which we couldn't have lived. And through the performance of yajñas, then these demigods get satisfied and they continue to profusely supply all the necessities of life. So in this way, we have debts to so many people. We also have debts to anybody from whom we take service. Now you look at the cow. How much service we are taking from the cow? The cow supplies milk. Milk is required for everyone's sustenance in this world. But what do the Prabhupada says that what do people in Kali Yuga do? They are mudas, they are rascals, Prabhupada calls them. So they actually take the cow from the milk. As long as the cow can give the milk, it's fine. As soon as the cow is not able to supply milk, they send that cow to the slaughterhouse to be killed so that they can then eat the meat of that cow. So Prabhupada says that there can be, no one can be so more ungrateful than people who do this. And in Kali Yuga we see that most of the people are doing this. They extract milk from the cows, and that too, that milk is also extracted in such a grotesque way. It's not that very lovingly the cows are milked like they used to be milked during Krishna's time. There are machines attached to the cow's udder, and they are milked and milked and milked. They are, you know, given some steroids and all that so that there is more milk that can be generated from these cows. So they are milked and milked and milked till they are actually gone dry. And once they are not able to supply milk anymore, they are sent off to slaughterhouses to be killed. So Prabhupada says that people who do this are actually getting entangled in karma. So much karma they are getting. First of all, they are not grateful. They are not repaying the cow for the service they are taking. On top of that, they are actually sending the cow to kill. So imagine the karma these people are getting. And as compared to that, if we see again, you know, referring to the 10th canto that we are studying right now in Bhaktivedanta course, we are studying that section right now where Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda and all the Vrajvasis, because of all the demons that came, Putna, Shakatashura, Trinavrata, all these disturbances that came, they decided to move from Gokul to Vrindavan. And it is explained over there that all the women, children, old people, cows and brahmanas, these were actually kept ahead. And then all the Kshatriya type, you know, the Vaishyas who had some bows and arrows, they all surround that party, and that is how the whole party moves from Gokul to Vrindavan. So, and in that section, Prabhupada explains that these five people should always be protected. The cows, women, children, old people and brahmanas. And specially Prabhupada is talking about the cows in that section. Prabhupada says that the Vrajvasis were so loving towards the cows that they were not able to live one moment without them. They were always thinking about how to keep their cows comfortable, how to render service to the cows because of so much milk that the cows were giving them. So the whole mood was about cow protection and not cow exploitation like we see today. So Prabhupada says that whomever you take service from, you become indebted to that person and you must repay your debt for the service that you have taken from that person. In fact, once Prabhupada was traveling with her disciple and in India and in the train. And you know how in train sometimes some people, some beggars come for asking for money. And they sing a song or they play some musical instrument and they sing along with that instrument so that people will give them some money. And Prabhupada told one of his disciples, he said that if we enjoy the song performed by these beggars or anybody else who is on the streets or anywhere, if you have listened to the song and you enjoyed the song, that means you have taken that service from that person. And then it is your duty to give some money. Even, you know, 1 rupee, 2 rupee, whatever you can, but you must give some money to that person because you actually enjoyed the song which that person sang. So Prabhupada was so attuned, he was so careful even about repaying debts to these, you know, in his ordinary material dealings. So he stresses that point that any service you take, please repay the debt to that person. However, we see that Madhavendra Puri. Now Madhavendra Puri is quoted by Srila Prabhupada very often in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Madhavendra Puri is the grand guru, the param guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Madhavendra Puri says in one of the sections of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada quotes him, he says that, "O my morning, O my evening prayer, all good unto you. O my morning bath, I bid you goodbye. O demigods and forefathers, please excuse me. I am unable to perform any more offerings to you separately." Because as we said, as soon as a child is born, he becomes indebted. There are so many debts the child gets. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, in one of the purports, he says that for ordinary material people who have not taken to Krishna consciousness, who are neglecting their prime goal of becoming Krishna conscious, becoming devotees, but they are just entangled in the day-to-day material life, for these people, if they actually do not perform yajñas and they do not repay the demigods or their pitrus, like pitas, their forefathers, or the rishis. And Prabhupada says that we have to pay our debts to the rishis also. For example, the Bhagavatam that we are reading. Who has written this Bhagavatam? Vyasadeva. Or any other scriptures that we read. So many different rishis have given us so much knowledge. They have written so many scriptures. They have given us so much knowledge about the Supreme Lord. So when we read all these scriptures, we are actually indebted to the rishis also. And we have to repay our debts to the rishis. So Prabhupada says that A materialist who is entangled in ordinary material activities must perform separate activities to repay his debts. He must perform sacrifices or yagyas to satisfy the demigods. He must do some pujas and all that to satisfy his pitrulokas. So in this way, he must satisfy his relatives, demigods, pitrus, rishis. And if he doesn't do that, he actually incurs sin. He gets entangled more and more in the karma cycle and he actually incurs sin. But then Prabhupada quotes Madhavendra Puri in the same section where Madhavendra Puri is singing these prayers. So Madhavendra Puri is saying that I am unable to perform my separate offerings to you, O demigods, O my morning bath, O my evening prayers. Evening prayers means, he means Sandhya Vandanam. I am not able to do any more offerings for your pleasure. Now I have decided to remember the great son of Nanda Maharaj anywhere and everywhere. He is the giver of liberation. He is Mukunda. So I have taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda and this is sufficient for me. And we know the verse again from Srimad Bhagavatam, Yatha Taror Moola Nishchanena. That verse means that if you satisfy the roots of the tree, if you water the roots of the tree, you do not need to separately water every leaf, branch and twig. You just put water in the root of the tree and from there the water is immediately supplied and all the branches, leaves, twigs, flowers of that tree get satisfied. So in the same way, like quoting Madhavendra Puri, Srila Prabhupada says that one who has taken shelter of Mukunda, one who has taken full shelter, not half shelter or you know half lukewarm devotional service, but one who has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, such a person is actually relieved from all debts, whether it is to demigods or to rishis or to pitas, the forefathers, or to his relatives or to his mother and father. A person who actually takes to Krishna consciousness, who becomes a devotee, fully surrendered devotee, is relieved of all these debts. But not that, you know, devotees take advantage when they read these sections and they think that, no, I don't need to do anything. We sometimes see devotees actually take this fanatical approach and they actually don't even look after, you know, even if their mother and father are suffering or something like that. Some devotees think, no, it's Maya. I should not be, you know, attached to my parents. Or, you know, some devotees are actually fanatic. They get married and then they want to stay detached from their wife and child. Why did you get married then? If you've got married, perform your duties. You know, fulfill your obligations to your grihastha ashram. So some devotees take advantage of these verses from the Bhagavatam, where it is said that you are not indebted to anyone or you don't have any obligations to anyone. And they actually then don't do their normal duties. And in this section, recently on Dandavats, there was a very nice article. It was a Back to Godhead article which had come. I think some of you must have read. Where Keshav Bharati Swami, the article was written by Keshav Bharati Swami. And it is entitled, I think, How I Delivered My Mother. So Keshav Bharati Swami was a sannyasi. And he was the only son, he was the only child of his parents. And that article is really beautiful. I would highly recommend for you all to read that on Dandavats. It explains how he actually made sure that his mother had all the facilities to remember Krishna when she was departing from the world. And he took a guidance from his seniors like Shivaram Swami and all. And he spent such a long time with his mother. He gave up all his preaching activities because obviously we know sannyasis in ISKCON are always traveling and preaching. But for some time he put even his preaching activities on hold because he came to know that his mother is going to leave her body soon. And he actually went and stayed with his mother for many weeks. And during that time he ensured, he read to her so much because his mother was a very, very strict conservative Christian. And she was always against what Keshav Bharati Swami had taken up. She was very against Krishna consciousness in the initial days. But just because of his love and his service to his mother's heart changed towards the end. She actually started relishing Krishna books. She actually started relishing Krishna consciousness. And in fact, through letter, Keshav Bharati Swami ensured that she got initiation from Shivaram Swami. And she was so happy to receive this initiation. And at the end, Keshav Bharati Swami was there with her chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. He had put Prabhupada's jukebox on for her. So he ensured that his mother was delivered from this world. He ensured that she got to hear and remember about Krishna when she was leaving this world. So it is not that because he has taken sannyas, he had surrendered himself to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he thought that, no, I don't have to do anything. I don't have any obligations to fulfill to my mother or father. I am not indebted because I have taken shelter of Mukunda. No, we see these examples. We see so many examples in ISKCON itself of our, you know, spiritual masters and sannyasis who actually try to deliver their parents, who do the antim sanskar, they take their ashes and put them in the Ganga or the Yamuna. So much care and attention these sannyasis still give to their parents. So it is not that we forsake our duties when we read these verses, but we realize that there are debts which we normally would have to separately fulfill to all these personalities Prabhupada mentions, like demigods, rishis, pitas, relatives. But we realize that when we, it is enough to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is no need to separately do so many pujas and pindas and all these things. If we are worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like Madhavendra Puri says, then everybody else, all the demigods, rishis, pitas, everybody else will be automatically satisfied. Just as when we water the root of the tree, every branch and twig and leaf is satisfied. So here Kardama Muni is not the why Prabhupada talks about indebtedness. Because Prabhupada is trying to bring out the point that Kardama Muni had been ordered by Brahma that you have to populate this universe, you have to produce lots and lots of population. But Kardama Muni is realizing, and he's telling also that he is not indebted to his immediate father, who is a Prajapati, but his debt is to the cause of all Prajapatis, who is the original Prajapati Vishnu. So he, although he did not exactly follow the order of his father and populate the universe in the way his father wanted, but still Kardama Muni knew that because he is satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he will not incur any sin for not repaying his debt to his father's order or not following his father's order. Because he ultimately had Kapila Dev as his child, and then he left home and he went and he became a sannyasi to pursue devotional service, one-pointed devotional service to Lord Krishna. So that is why Prabhupada brings about this point of indebtedness and how Kardama Muni was relieved of any debts that he had to his father. So it's time up. We'll end the class here, and if anybody has any questions or corrections or any comments, or anybody would like to add any point. I believe from what I have read in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Lord Brahma had a wife. I think her name is Saraswati. Is that right, Gopavindesh Prabhu? He's in the Grahastha Ashram, isn't it? Yeah, he's in the Grahastha Ashram. That is, the way he produces children might not be the same as normal Grahasthas would produce through union. So he produces through his mind, and from the shadow of Brahma so many things came out. So the way he produces children might be different, but he was in the Grahastha Ashram. You're not convinced, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, is that right? Gopavindesh Prabhu? He was in Grahastha Ashram. I think his wife's name is Saraswati, the original Saraswati, something like that. Any other questions or corrections, or anybody would like to add anything? So in ISKCON currently there is a big contention about this whole point of people, devotees becoming vegans because they do not want to take part in the karma. Because we know the dairy industry, it is the truth that the cows, there is milk extracted, you know, it's not extracted in a very nice way. The cows are not treated very well in the dairy industry. And then ultimately those cows are sent for slaughter. So we had this discussion even in our Bhaktivedanta class where, you know, there is a big, big, strong cohort of devotees who want to become vegans because of this matter. But there are some devotees who then say that Prabhupada has said that milk is the brain food for everyone and milk nourishes the brain. So it is very important for the growth of especially children. Yes, we understand that. So I know especially in London and many parts of the world, even in India, devotees as far as possible try to obtain ahimsa milk. They try to find out. And in India, I know here it's hard, but in India and in London especially, they do have ahimsa milk where the cows are not sent for slaughtering after they have been milked. So In India, I know especially devotees in many temples are obtaining milk from such dairies which are ahimsa dairies, where the cows are actually looked after and they are protected. But in Australia, I know it's very hard. So I know of some devotees who try to get milk from a special farm where their cows are not killed. I know there are some devotees, like Amal Gaur Sundar Prabhu, there are a few devotees who are trying to get that sort of milk. But I do remember one anecdote from Srila Prabhupada's pastimes. Once Prabhupada was in America and somebody had got milk, and then Prabhupada was told that, you know how milk has vitamin D also in that. So Prabhupada was told that they add some fish oil or something in that which gives that vitamin D in that milk. And Prabhupada said that it's okay, we have paid for the milk, so we don't have that karma anymore. People who had it have that, so we have paid for it and we are offering it to Krishna, so we are not getting that karma anymore. So it is ultimately devotee's personal choice what they want to do about this stand. And if possible, as far as possible, try to obtain ahimsa milk. If we can find out any such source even in Australia, that would be helpful. Any other comments or questions? Thank you so much for having that. Okay, we'll end the class here. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Shri.